This past weekend at a rally, President Trump mocked Joe Biden.
He'll listen to the scientists. If I listened totally to the scientists, we would right now have a country that would be in a massive depression instead of we're like a rocket ship. Take a look at the numbers.
Trump's fans loved it. Other Americans may have wondered why. And why are they so angry? Well, Michael Sandel thinks he has at least part of the answer. He's the rock star poli-sci philosophy professor at Harvard. He says in addition to jobs that have moved overseas due to globalization or huge disparities in income, there's another inequity, the huge number of Americans who haven't attended a four-year school. As Professor Sandel put it in an op-ed, disdain for the less educated is the last acceptable prejudice. And he says to bridge this gap, we have to re-examine the notion in our meritocracy that if you work hard enough, you can make it. And he says if you did, there's a good chance you had help. Michael Sandel's book is The Tyranny of Merit, What's Become of the Common Good? It's fascinating. He joins us now. Welcome.
Good to be with you, Robin.
And, you know, I can just hear the voices saying, and maybe you don't mind saying a little bit too, if we're honest. Wait a minute. I worked for everything I have. Briefly, just remind us, Donald Trump, for instance, inherited $200 million from his father. Is that kind of part of what you mean?
It is, Robin. There is a tendency to believe that our success is our own doing. But this leads us to forget luck, family, teachers, coaches, what I call meritocratic hubris. And it goes along with the tendency to look down on those less fortunate or less credentialed than ourselves.
Okay, I'm sure there are listeners who really, really, really did pull them up by their own bootstraps single-handedly. And we want to acknowledge that, too. But you take us through where this noble idea of a meritocracy came from, the founding fathers wanting to move from an aristocracy, inherited power, to one based on merit, meritocracy. But then you also explain how morality soon enters the picture. The Bible, in part, says, if you make it, you're blessed. If you don't, well, you get a plague.
Right. And that brings out the dark side of meritocracy. It's certainly inspiring to tell people you can make it if you try. But the implication is those who struggle, it must be their fault.
In a funny way, you write the English might have had it easier because they knew they were in an aristocracy. The power is just going to be handed down to sons, likely, and daughters. And so they didn't blame themselves. Here, it becomes internalized. And here are some of the stats. It's easier to rise from poverty in Germany, Denmark, Canada than the U.S. Americans now born poor tend to stay poor. And so let's go to one of the reasons you say this is happening. The cousin of if you work hard, you will succeed is if you don't go to a four-year college, you can't succeed. You remind us SATs were created by the then head of Harvard to get more qualified students from the Midwest who were not in this sort of blue blood stream that had been feeding Ivy League schools. But you say that it just doesn't work because schools have little impact on upward mobility. Most of the students there are well off in the first place.
Right. Today, there is a very close correlation between the income of your family and the likelihood of how well you will score. And despite generous financial aid, still it's the case that in Ivy League universities, there are more students from the top 1% than there are from the entire bottom half of the country. And even if somehow we could create a truly level playing field, there would still be a flaw in the meritocratic ideal. And this has to do with the attitudes toward winning and losing that accompanies a meritocratic society. Those attitudes, I think, have deepened the resentments that have come along with the inequality of income and wealth that we've seen in recent decades. It isn't just that working people have faced stagnant wages and job losses. It's also that those who've landed on top have come to believe that their success is their own doing, that those left behind must deserve their fate as well. And this sense of being looked down upon, a sense of humiliation, I think is a big part of what enables politicians like Trump to succeed.
Well, let's stay with college for a second because there's a sort of an arms race going on, which is one of the reasons that the people with more money have more kids in these schools because they're probably getting SAT tutors or sending their kids abroad right. in the summer to beef up their resume by having them work on some goodwill mission. I mean, if the current college scene is ungenerous to losers, those who are left out, it's also oppressive to winners. It's making these kids nervous wrecks. In other words, merit has become a tyrant. So you have suggestions, yours and others, and you start with colleges. You say, how about you just have to have a certain level of grades? Then from that group, choose who actually goes to school according to a lottery.
Right. A lottery of the qualified. Places like Harvard and Stanford get over 40,000 applicants each year for about 2,000 places. Run a lottery. What I'm hoping to prompt is a greater recognition of the role of luck. We've turned those adolescent years into a kind of stress-strewn meritocratic gauntlet. By the time they arrive in college, they're shell-shocked, so the tyranny of merit exerts its oppressive character toward those who are excluded and who are denied dignity and esteem in the society, not to say well-paying jobs as well. But it also oppresses even the winners.
The lottery would help some climb up a rung toward college, but not everybody wants to. And this brings us to, instead of making success conditioned on rising up that ladder, which implies fleeing where you are, improve, and also respect where people are. You mentioned a Republican strategist, Owen Cass. He says Republicans should not push corporate tax cuts and free trade to boost the GDP. Focus instead on workers, including a government wage subsidy for low-income workers.
Renew the dignity of work and put the question of the dignity of work right at the center of our political debate. We've focused too single-mindedly on addressing the deepening inequality by saying, go to college, what you earn will depend on what you learn, you can make it if you try. And I argue that this is an inadequate response. What we should be doing instead is focusing less on arming people for meritocratic competition and focus more on the dignity of work. But I also think the dignity of work is more than merely economic. It has to do with according respect and recognition and social esteem. So what I'm calling for really, Robin, is a shift away from seeing individual upward mobility as the only solution to inequality, and instead trying to make life better for those who don't have a four-year college degree, and nearly two-thirds of Americans do not.
And that's
yet,
amazing.
Two-thirds.
Yeah.
We forget this. And yet, we woefully underinvest in the forms of learning on which the majority of our fellow citizens depend. State colleges, two-year community colleges, and vocational and technical training. We don't accord these forms of learning the honor and respect that they are due and that they have in other countries such as Germany.
It's kind of funny, your main point, restoring the dignity of work, because we're doing that at least in the short term now, suddenly making some of our most low-paid workers heroes, you know, orderlies in hospitals and cashiers. We know we can do it, but as far as actually making change, you know we've been here before. You give props to Michael Young's 1958 book, The Rise of Meritocracy. You know, he thought it was great that class barriers were being broken, that children of the working class could rise. But he predicted hubris and humiliation would be inevitable. It would set up a false value system, mistaking achievement for human worth. So how else make this change? I mean, Donald Trump never says, you can make it if you try, which was President Obama's rallying cry. Donald Trump never says that. He uses the language of grievance. He says there's winners and losers, and they think you're losers. Should Democrats stop saying, you can make it in America if you just work hard?
I think Democrats and Republicans have made the mistake of assuming that the rhetoric of rising, the idea that you can make it if you try, is an adequate response. The rhetoric of rising is not enough. And what these mainstream politicians and parties missed was the insult implicit in this meritocratic offer of mobility. It was highly conditional. If you get a four-year college degree, then you will have a chance to rise. I think that Democrats have had a kind of tin ear to the anger, to the frustration, to the resentments that have been building. Donald Trump proved adept at tapping into that sense of grievance. And I think we also need to remind those on top of the role of luck and good fortune. Recognizing the role of luck can prompt a certain humility, and humility is the civic virtue we need now.
And just to underscore that, you're not saying get rid of excellence. We all want to go to the best doctors or have the best plumber. If you are one of those with a combination of luck and hard work who's made it, a little dollop of there but for the grace of God go I towards someone who hasn't will go a long way.
It will.
Michael Sandel, professor of poli-sci and philosophy at Harvard. His book is The Tyranny of Merit, What's Become of the Common Good. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.